Okay, so for the agenda, I'm just going to start by reviewing that. Again, I think we're kind of going to be light on attendees today. So we're going to start with introductions and reintroductions, review the status of the current action items. We have a couple of announcements, and then we will review the two work items for this week. Or for the, sorry, for the credentials community group work items. And that's Ryan Grant is leading the discussion on BTCR. And I'm going to talk to some of the signature suites just to give an overview of what's in the suites. And the hope is Manu isn't able to make it today, but he mentioned Dave may be able to fill in some gaps if there are questions, and I can scribe for him while that's happening. Okay, so for introductions and reintroductions, do we have everyone identified? Oh, we have Moses today. Okay, so, well, let's give a head to reintroductions, and let's have Moses introduce himself. I see, yeah, so we may not have, okay. Do we have anyone else that's new? Let's see for reintroductions.
I'm new, this is Glenn Rempe. I'm the Vice President of Engineering with Tyrion, and here in place of Wayne Vaughn this morning.
Oh, thank you for joining. Okay, so let's talk through the status of the current action items. So one was that Manu needed to get privileges for the new chairs to modify the W3C site, and I confirmed that we can edit it. So the meeting minute format is different from the one we've been using, but in any case, I'm going to work through something so that we can get our post published there as well. But basically, I made some changes so that it doesn't look like the site is totally abandoned, and you know, the current meeting information will be there shortly. Let's see. So the other ones are things that are sort of ongoing. At the end of next week, we'll have the work item poll snapshot results. And then related to that, some of the things around the naming goals, mission statements, all those on hold till roughly end of next week. So nothing really interesting there. Okay, so for announcements, there are two things. We're talking about having a BTCR remote hackathon in July. So it's seeming like that will be the second or third week. I personally can't make the third week, but I know Ryan, Christopher, and I are interested in, you know, just getting some code and more detailed specs out related to that. Let's see. And then also I wanted to mention that next week we'll have Jan Kamenisch and his team presenting on selected disclosure, identity mixture, CK signatures. So that should be pretty interesting. We're going to leave, you know, the whole work item section to go over that, because those are areas of work items that we haven't really had much time to discuss so far. So I'm looking forward to that. I forgot to make room on the agenda for the poll results. So we're getting a lot more responses. The same trends are still happening, except decentralized identifiers is in the lead. So, yeah, a lot of interest with that, with all the verifiable claims related items, privacy and security requirements. Let's see, data minimization, selective disclosure. So, again, we're going to be snapshotting these results next week and, you know, sort of going ahead with some more planning. or rather identifying which work items we're going to start on first. So what do we have next? Okay, so let's jump into the work items. So Ryan, do you want to get started?
Sure. I have reports of variable voice quality on my Bluetooth device, but if I get feedback that it's not working well, I can just shut that off. So I'm talking about the BTCR method specific implementation of distributed identity. So this falls under the DID spec format, and it's a way to control an identity and prove that you control it using the Bitcoin blockchain. Basically, we have a spec to follow under the DID master specification, and our task is to define how an identity is controlled and changed using entries on the Bitcoin blockchain, and tie that to a DDO, which is a description of you know what the identity is, and then get that implemented in some software. So that's we'll be working on the software on the hackathon. So that's what the topic is. So what's done is that we have a very clear specification to meet with the DID specification. We have an implementation plan using that we outlined at the latest Web of Trust conference in the spring, and I will post a summary page right here for that. I noticed there's a dead link in that, which needs to be fixed. So we have a clear outline of the work we need to do, and we are we're fleshing out that document into a draft specification. So what we're aiming for going forward is in October for the Boston conference, we'd like to have a draft specification and some software operating. There are a couple of questions we need to answer about whether we're using two transactions or one transaction with a special opcode in the Bitcoin scripting system. And so we'd like to make some progress on that at the hackathon. So I guess, any questions?
Yeah, I have a question. About the DDOs, I talked to Christopher briefly, and I can't remember. Are the assumption is that the DDOs are stored, like they could be, say, in IPFS, or they could be URL, you know, some content data URL?
Okay, so I lost half the last few words of your question, but I think I understand.
Got it.
The question is, are we pointing to external DDOs? And a DDO, by the way, is a DID description object. So the DID record is it's really a pointer to the information that you want to present for your identity, and you can change that at any time, and that information is kind of contained in the DDO, which is the description object. So the answer is We're going to try to support both. We are going to try to support links out to IPFS, as well as a new idea about a fully deterministic DID description object that is it's kind of implied by the set of transactions that have occurred on the DID itself.
Hello, everyone. I'm Federico Squartini, calling from Rome. So I and Tensor 5, who's also here in the chat, would be definitely interested in taking part to the hackathon. So we are also, we would like to implement, write an implementation for the BTCR specification, either our own or a community one, because we have already some clients who would be interested in such an implementation. And we also iterated on the BTCR specification. I mean, we only got the idea, we talked briefly with Christopher at the last Rebooting Web of Trust conference, and we have a few questions on that. So maybe, I don't know, if we could discuss on how we could solve these issues, it would be great for us. Thanks.
I would love to talk more after the call here. Let's definitely get in contact.
Thank you.
And next we have Christopher on the queue.
Thank you. So yeah, basically, I'm curious how many other people, we are interested in this initial based DID system. We'd love to have some more people participating or taking advantage of the DIDs that we create or the techniques we create to test some verifiable claim and other purposes for it. I don't want to use a lot of the community time for how some of the different approaches work. I would say that the biggest, we know how to do it in a simple way. We also know a way to make it compatible with things like Blockstack and IPFS and some other uses. I think the biggest question has more to do with what does the DDO look like? There's been some questions in whether or not the DDO should be in and of itself a verifiable claim. I think Manu and I and others think that maybe at least for some of these simpler DDO uses, it should be, but the current 1.0 spec just has it as a JSON structure. And then the other question is a harder one, more specific to Bitcoin, in that to preserve an anonymity and to preserve censorship resistance, it has been suggested to use a more complex structure that sort of hides the information in a way such that that a miner can't recognize, oh, this is somebody trying to register a change in their DID. I'm not going to put that in my block. And there are ways to basically hide that, but they add extra complexity, and we're not quite sure whether or not it's worth it and actually how high that risk is. So if people have some opinions on should we go to that extra length or have, a better solution for us, please let us know. Thanks.
If I could comment on that piece, this is Glenn Rempe from Tyrion.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I would suggest perhaps taking a look at our new Chain Point 3.0 solution, which is coming out shortly with a full OpenStack backend as well to support it. But it's a new proof format for anchoring data to the Bitcoin and Ethereum blockchains. And I think it would be a good solution for those that you're looking at to anchor any data to the blockchain. We use currently the up-return mechanism, which is the most frequently used for anchoring data in the blockchain into Bitcoin. I know there have been discussions by people looking into alternatives that would be a little bit more censorship resistant than an up-return. Something called pay-to-contract hash is another mechanism, but those don't really have any solid implementations out there yet for people to use as a reference. So using op-return is pretty much the name of the game these days. But I can give more update on the Chain Point 3.0 updates if desired.
Actually, that will be perfect because what we have after this is just a quick overview of the signature suites. And we were hoping to talk through Chain Point 3.0 a bit. So yeah, we'd be happy to have you present. So we have Christopher on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I think I'm familiar with Chain Point obviously, we'd love to have you talk more about that. I think the biggest thing you should maybe be aware of is that we're linking to the transaction through a proposal that does a Betch 32 reference to a confirmed transaction, rather than using the very long transaction ID that is sort of the current state of the art for Bitcoin. And we can send you the link on that if that's something of interest. It's a much shorter and specifically oriented to have both error correcting and error detecting capability. So if you're interested in, you know, supporting that in Chain Point, that'd be fabulous.
That's it. Yeah, I'd certainly be happy to take a look at that. And if you're ready, I can talk about Chain Point updates.
Yeah, actually, that would be great. Go ahead.
Okay, sure. So we have a new version of the Chain Point proof format coming out. This is Chain Point 3.0. The current is 2.0. So there's a change going on with us, which is that it's not going to just be a proof format that we're hoping that people will standardize on. We're also providing what is currently a closed backend stack for generating these proofs and anchoring data to the various blockchains. We're creating an entirely new and highly scalable version of that backend stack. And that will be completely open sourced, so that will be available for others to run as well. And we're also partnering with some large organizations that I won't announce today, but to run additional copies of this back-end stack, and they will participate in what we're calling the Chain Point Network, which will be a network of these back-end services that will share data through a private blockchain, and you'll be able to use any one of these instances to verify a proof, and it will contain all of the data needed to verify a proof against Bitcoin or Ethereum. Speaking about the Chain Point proof format itself, which previously had been purely a JSON LD document, in Chain Point 3.0, it's still a JSON LD document, but we have completely rethought how we will structure that document. Now it's much more flexible. It's highly nestable, where you can have various attributes of it live inside others. Additionally, we are including precision timestamps into that proof that you'll get back for the first time. These will represent firstly the NTP time of the servers that are generating the proof, and it represents the time that you actually submitted the proof. Additionally, when you submit a hash to us, what we give you back instantly is a version 1 UUID. The version 1 UUID contains that high precision prime stamp embedded into the UUID along with random data. So the handle that we actually give you for the proof itself contains a precision timestamp. And in order for you to reduce the amount of trust that you need to have in that timestamp, we're also incorporating something called the NIST beacon from the National Institutes of Standards and Technology. The NIST beacon is a highly, a 512-bit random value that's published every minute by NIST. And they put these together in a hash-linked blockchain of sorts, and they publish those publicly. And so we're actually incorporating the latest NIST value, for example, 1 minute ago, into every proof that we generate. So this lets you bookend this proof to say that it absolutely was not submitted prior to a certain time, which is represented by NIST. And on the other side of that bracketing, of course, is the existing anchoring that we'll do into the public blockchains. So you'll be able to prove that the time you submitted a proof is within a certain window of time, cryptographically prove it. Additionally, we have some new metadata that's in there. As I mentioned, the timestamps in both UUID and NIST ISO, in the ISO 8601 format. And we also are providing several tools that let you validate the schema of this proof using JSON schema format. And in addition to the JSON-LD stuff that we have updated as well. And lastly, we also are supporting a binary format for this proof. We provide a simple tool where you can use, which will apply message pack and zlib compression onto the JSON-LD proof. And so you end up with something that's maybe about 35% of the original size of the JSON-LD proof. And this can be presented in binary form or in Base64 encoded binary form. And that's how our API will actually return it in either format at your request. So I think quickly those are the big highlights of what's changing, and I'm happy to address any questions.
For questions, we have Christopher on the queue.
Yes, so this is actually a joint meeting today of the Credentials Working Group and the verifiable, not verifiable, the data verification community group. Are you interested in submitting this as a draft for us to work on to, you know, move in the official standards process to be a true standard at some point?
So I know that the Chainpoint format, and I'm sorry, I'm relatively new to the company and this is my first time joining this group. I know the Chainpoint format has been going through the community standards process, but I think I would probably defer discussion of that. Perhaps we can take that offline with Wayne or at the next public meeting with Wayne Vaughn, our CEO, because he's probably in a better position to answer where we want to go with that from a directional standpoint.
And then my second question is, can it be used in a fashion so that it can be included in the signature block of something else that is being signed in other ways?
Yes, so I, as this is a JSON-LD document with its own chain point type, for example, if that outer document were also a JSON-LD document that was going to have a JSON-LD signature applied to it, I believe that, yes, you can embed this into a larger document, and thus it would be a part of the signature of that overall document. Does that answer that?
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't see, thank you, and I don't see anyone else on the queue, so this is a good segue to the other signature suites. Let me send out a link. Okay, I have to apologize. This is very low tech, very small as well. But the idea here, some questions came up around what is the intent and sort of scope of each signature suite that we have in the work item list. So we thought this would be a good chance to review them, not at sort of deep technical detail, but just to make sure we're on the same page for, you know, sort of what's involved. Let's see. I'm making sure I can monitor the chat while I do this. 1 second. Okay. So the first one, now I'm on page two. Let's talk first about the 2017 RSA Signature Suite. So this is one that we worked on in earnest at last rebooting Web of Trust. So we had a little hackathon, people working on implementing this suite and to vet it out, and it worked out. So now the idea is, take it forward. So what did we do? What did we do during rebooting Web of Trust? So we took the draft community report that you see in this page, and basically said, is this setup complete enough to actually implement as an, JSON LB signature, or rather a new signature suite to add to the LB signature suite. The idea behind it is it would allow us to identify JSON and linked data signatures. In the past, there had been concerns with JWS, a lot of it around the need to Base64 encode the content, also related to things like ending up with a message that is not itself, which means you can't store it in a JSON document store without decoding it. We wanted to vet this approach in which we use the unencoded payload option, which is a relatively new feature that was added for JWS. So basically what that says is, for us, you use a combination of unencoded payloads and attached payloads, and get the signature value in that way. And a lot of details are in this Rebooting Web of Trust paper at the end. So yes, we created these. The big surprise was that there was very limited support in the JWS libraries for this unencoded payload option. So what we did was we took the PHP library and figured out what's going on there, built test cases against that, and basically built the equivalent of just that library we need in Python, JavaScript, Java. And it all worked out fine in the end, but we want to sort of address a couple of things with folks in the JWS community. Things like, should we add these as extensions to their JWS libraries, because we don't want to include it as sort of an off by one kind of tacky thing in, say, like the JSON-LB signature suites. So if support for those libraries is available, then the change is very small and very straightforward, and the usage is just like any other LB signature suite. So concerns we had around, past concerns we had around size bloat, sort of difficulty of managing these, additional binary things that we have to carry along, those are addressed. I think also related to it, some of it we should probably add some clarifications to the specification. I think Manu had all of like one day to write up the spec, so we can enhance that with things that we discovered during the implementation. I think the most important part of this one is that it does, it does remove some friction that we had in terms of linked data signatures previously not playing well with JWS. So there are a lot of community concerns around that. You know, for the reasons I mentioned before, it was sort of a blocker, but Manu and, you know, someone else on the JWS, Jose's side, worked through this solution, and it allows us to use it. It makes it easier to say, you know, linked data signatures are compatible with this other well-known standard. Yeah, so any questions about the RSA signature suite? Let me look at the queue. Okay, so I'm going to move on to the Merkle proof signature suite. This is the one where there were a few questions because this is actually chain point V2, not V3, which is the one that was just described that also has timestamps similar to open timestamps. So hopefully you can see that example that I included. But this is just chain point V2 with an additional type indicating its, you know, space in the LV signature suite. And what it's meant to do is, you know, a lot of people are wanting to use LV signatures to describe, you know, data that have been put into a Merkle tree and then anchored to the blockchain. So this one, Wayne had donated this to this community, and so what we want to do is formalize this Merkle proof suite with this type, which is called Merkle Proof 2017. So the work has already been done. I think the main things that we might want to have some discussion over is, you know, naming or something like this. But effectively, you know, we have a lot of implementations using it. BlockCerts is using this. And, you know, Chainpoint V2 has been used by a lot of people in the wild. Any questions about this one? Ryan?
I don't completely understand what the Merkle proof is offering. Do you have a link that I could follow?
You know what? I did not include the links, and I think it's because the bulk, okay, so we have a pretty empty spec, like in the draft community report. It's very weak and needs to be updated. So the main thing that I would point you to now is actually in Chainpoint. Let's see. Actually, I can't give you a direct link to it, but let's see.
Is this under the search?
David has an answer.
Oh, cool.
Well, I don't know if it's so much of an answer, but I'm pretty sure there are a bunch more edits for the specification that didn't get pushed. I think Monty was working on this like on an airplane, and they ended up never getting pushed. So I'll have a talk with him and see if that can get pushed to the spec, if that is in fact the case, which would provide more information.
Okay, and to answer my question, any like GitHub repo would be sufficient. Thank you.
I mean, the main thing is, the main point, and maybe not be clear from the discussion, is that you know, just having a signature for things isn't necessarily good enough. That adding a timestamp by a Merkle proof that basically says, you know, this and all the other things that wish to be put on the blockchain as an acknowledgement of the rough time of the event would be useful. So it basically just has all the, you know, the time stamping service or, you know, the chain proofing service basically just gives you all of the leaves so that you can reconstruct your Merkle proof and then inspect it against the transaction where the Merkle proof was registered. And ChainPoint was 2.0 was designed to work with multiple blockchains. Obviously, a lot of people use Bitcoin. But as it's gotten more expensive, that's been, other people have been proposing things. ChainPoint 3 offers a lot more fidelity and a lot more, you know, information and a lot more compression of the data. And probably some other features that I'm forgetting and our guest today. So I'd love to, you know, to see the 3.0 stuff brought in now that we have an opportunity to standardize on this and begin to move this, you know, in a standards track way. I'd really like to begin to do so. Thanks.
So we have someone who is implicitly on the queue, so Dave, we'll get to you after that. So Moses has an interesting use case as well around it, but just briefly to touch on what Christopher was saying. For block certs, we use it exactly like that. So essentially, blockchain transaction gives us a timestamp. There is a signature, signing key related to that. And then we're using JSON-LD normalization to get the consistent hash of the thing that's being, you know, the individual record that's placed in the Merkle tree. So that's essentially how we use it. To prove the hash of this document matches what's expected, and you can follow the Merkle proof, and yes, that matches what's in the op return. So Moses, do you want to speak to your use case, and then we'll get to Dave.
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Moses. I'm from a company called FutureLab. So the use case we're working on is in the ICO space. We've recently recruited a former commissioner from the SEC to come and help us design how we could do ICOs that would comply with SEC requirements. So one of the use cases we came up with is to be able to create a DID for an investor so that you have a decentralized ID. The SEC doesn't care that they pay taxes or not. They just want to make sure they don't get cheated. So they want to make sure it's a real person. And then a series of verifiable claims about how much money they have. For example, if Coinbase sent, he has $10 million in, you know, 10,000 Bitcoin, that would be useful. So if we collected a number of verifiable claims about assets and liabilities, that would theoretically prove accredited status. So we're working on that kind of use case. And if you guys have any input, like the stuff about Chain 3.0 is very interesting, so I'd love to talk about this with anybody that's interested. I will put my contact info on the chat line so you can contact me directly. Okay? Do you guys have any questions about the use case?
I think it's a pretty clear use case. Cool.
That sounds great.
Okay,
so we have first Dave Longley on the queue, and Dave, I'll scribe while you talk.
Sure. I didn't have that much to say. I was just going to jump in and say a term that is useful for understanding the use of the signature suite is proof of publication, if I can say that clearly. It's effectively more, it gives you more trust that something actually happened at some point in time somewhere versus just receiving a piece of information that was signed that asserts that something happened at some point in time. You can then go and check to see if it actually did in some other place. And so that's the main purpose for it. It's a proof of publication that something was published at some point in time.
Thank you. Yes, that's an important term that people may be more familiar with. Let's see. So we have David C. David?
Are you muted?
Okay. So proof of a publication requires an author or publisher. So again, secure timestamps are not needed. If you're online, I'd be curious to follow up discussion on that. Okay, Squirt has the floor.
Thanks. I was curious to know what is the relationship between chain point and open timestamps. Do they use the same specifications? Are they competing implementations or what? Thanks.
Can we get the Ethereum representative to speak to that?
Yes. Yes, this is Glenn Rempe. Both Open Timestamps and Chainpoint are open source protocols. I think we feel that ours is far more documented and understood and easier to use. But they both anchor to public blockchain, Open Timestamp only to Bitcoin. Chainpoint will anchor to both Bitcoin and Ethereum. Open timestamps only supports a binary version of their proof. While we have a JSON-LD pure binary and Base64 encoded version of that binary that we support. So they're trying to achieve similar goals. They both use OpReturn to anchor to Bitcoin, but I think that we do a more comprehensive job. And certainly from the backend perspective, especially with our new suite coming out open source, we will handle scale out of the box, literally orders of magnitude more than what OpenTimestamps does. So at the rate of tens of thousands of hashes per second. And they don't come close to that. So those are a few of those things I would highlight.
We have Christopher on the now.
Yeah, so I need to speak a little bit to this because, I've been a little frustrated by the situation. Peter Todd was asked to, was participating in rebooting Web of Trust. We reconciled a couple of different proposals to make Chainpoint 2, and then Peter and the Tyrion folks talked at last fall's rebooting Web of Trust about Chainpoint 3 and open timestamps. And it basically, at some point, things kind of fell apart. I have several times tried to address or fix that. I think the bottom line for me is I'm going to support whichever one goes through the standards process, if Open Timestamps wants to basically go, hey, we're going to listen and we're going to be inclusive to designs and requirements of a large number of people, then that's the one that I'll support. Right now, they're kind of roughly equivalent. I know that, Open Timestamps has some ideas that are, potentially unique but haven't been implemented. In the bottom line, I'm going to support whatever is standards track. That's it.
Let's see. Thank you. Okay, so going on. I was on briefly, but I answered my own question. Okay, so we have a couple of more. The last slide, which is all of the other signature suites that I was hoping Manu could talk to, but we have Dave here, and so I'll get let you just briefly talk to except for the last bullet point.
I'm sorry, Cam, you're breaking up really bad. I can't understand you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me try again. Okay, so Dave, do you mind speaking to the last slide, everything but the chain point time signatures, which Glenn already spoke to?
Sure. So first on this last slide is linked data signatures, which is effectively the base specification that other signatures, linked data signatures are based off of. So that specification outlines sort of a basic framework for creating other kinds of linked data signatures. And that framework includes defining, it lays out that there are different components that you need to have in order to define your own linked data signature suite. And that includes things like a canonicalization algorithm, a message digest algorithm, and a signature algorithm. On top of that, it also lays out how you can specify keys and use linked data to find those keys over the internet, over the web, and do bidirectional linking and things like that for confirming that whoever signed a document is actually the owner of the key and a number of other things. So there's some basic things that are common to just about any linked data signature suite, but any specific linked data signature suite can override anything in the base specification. So there are a number of things that are common to them, but you can also override things if you want to make changes to whatever it is you feel like you need to make changes to. So it's a way to kind of bind all those things together and give a common model for how linked data signatures work. So on top of that specification, a number of signature suites have been created, including ones that Kim has already talked about, like the RSA 2017 signature spec. Another one is the 2016 Koblitz elliptic curve signatures, which was created to allow signing of linked data using the Bitcoin, using Bitcoin and Ethereum digital signatures. So keys on the Bitcoin uses the Koblitz curve, and so that signature suite is showing how you can use Bitcoin to sign things, or Bitcoin keys to sign things. The redaction signature suite and others that are kind of there are a number of different ideas related to the redaction signature suite. One of them has to do with using Kamenish. Now I can't pronounce the name. Liz can seal signature.
Okay.
Yeah, we're even now, Christopher. So using seal signatures to effectively create more pseudonymous, you could do minimum disclosure and selective disclosure of information. So you can redact, you can sign a piece of information, you can redact certain portions of it when presenting that information. Without revealing too much, and in such a way that other people cannot guess what that information is. And so that's a spec that's is a proposed work item, and there are a number of interesting ideas related to that and related to the other work items for data minimization and selective disclosure that we're also considering working on this community group. So that signature suite speaks to that space. And then the last item, Kim said, you know, she wanted to either talk about it or effectively we've talked about it a little bit already with respect to Chainpoint.
Thank you. And actually, I mixed my minute taking. So we think the redaction signature suite.
Your audio is breaking up again.
Yeah. Okay, I see. It's a certain location. Okay, here we go. So Ryan, do you have a question?
Yes. I just wanted to verify for the redaction, it's a matter of separately signing all the parts that might not be redacted and then choosing which parts to display and which parts to redact. Is that correct?
Yes, that is what's currently in that spec. And but because we're going to be taking up this work for, or at least that's one work item we hope to take up, it's open to changing how that works. And I would not say that it's a totally solid spec yet, so it's experimental in its stages, but that is currently one way of doing it. There are a number of other ways that are being explored that have to do with effectively taking statements. If you took like a giant document full of claims and you broke it down into individual statements, you could provide some kind of a salt. It would have to be a secret salt for each one of those statements. And you could put that into a Merkle tree and present a Merkle tree proof on, and you would effectively put that into a Merkle tree, sign the root of the Merkle tree, and then present a Merkle tree proof to demonstrate that your information was signed. So that's another way that that things could go. I think what's currently in the redaction signature suite, in some way, I think Manu and Evernim would be better to speak on this because they're the ones that mostly did most of the work there. That is related to CL signatures, and they would be better advocates for that, but Mona couldn't make the call today.
Good, thanks.
Next, we have Christopher on the queue.
Yeah, so I just wanted to, again reiterate, the redaction suite just simply allows something that is fully signed. You have, proof of the entire set of claims for then the presenter to present a subset of them and still have the thing be valid. I think that's the basic requirement. Now, exactly how to do that, there are two directions. There's the, you can do it cryptographically through redaction, where you're just, doing the Merkle tree type stuff to do things. There are some security questions there in the sense that you have to have nonces for this not to be able to be fingerprinted. This is kind of what the FOAF problem was, almost two decades ago, where people published the hashes of their friend's email addresses, but then it was really easy to figure out, who actually was friends with somebody because, the hashes were easy to do. So you have to have these nonces. The CL technique, the selective disclosure cryptographic technique, is an alternative way to hide some of that information or present proofs around that information. But it has a greater computational weight of the proof. So it's going to be interesting. I'm also kind of interested, David, if you have some thoughts on, to a certain extent, the redaction method could maybe be almost a different canonicalization method, sort of. It's like you're basically doing a hash for each of the quads in JSON-LD, and then at any point you can substitute the hash for the quad rather than the quad itself, hash plus a nonce. And I was wondering, where did that fit in? Is it a canonicalization method or is it actually a signature method? That's it.
Right. Right. Yeah. So the basic idea for using Merkle trees and doing the salting, the secret salting of statements, the basic idea would be that you would run the canonicalization algorithm first, which effectively outputs a set of ordered statements that will, regardless of how the graph, whatever syntax you had the graph in, put that into an abstract form, run the canonicalization algorithm, you'll always get the same set of statements ordered in the same way out of it. And then for each one of those statements, you can consider that a separate claim, that's the most atomic piece of information you might want to reveal. For each one of those, you would need to salt that piece of information for exactly the reason you're saying. You don't want people to either be able to guess information through hashing. So you could imagine a situation where the statement says you are over the age of 18. There's only two options there, and if you knew the person's identifier and you just need to run a hashing algorithm twice to guess whether or not they're over or under the age of 18, that sort of thing. On top of that, there's the correlation problem you spoke about with if you get those hashes, you can then start comparing them to other hashes and start finding out more information than what people wanted to actually disclose. Getting back to your question, when you have this canonicalized output, you can go down each statement, and if you have a way of modifying each statement in a way to introduce randomness, then you can place each one of those randomized hashes into the leaves of a Merkle tree, get the root of it, and sign the root of it. And so that's one way of creating a redaction signature suite. The other way, which is I'm answering a question that I don't think is necessarily part of the canonicalization algorithm. It's a step that follows right after it, where you decide how you put the information into the signature to be signed. And the other way of doing this is to use CL signatures, which you can think of as effectively a CL signature. You can think of it as a bit string, where you can choose to present or not present certain bits in that bit string. So what that effectively means is, if you want to have a verifiable claim with a broad set of interesting information, you need to find a way to encode all of that information into your bit string and then reveal just those bits about your information. And so each one of those bits that you're revealing has a certain computational complexity related to the cryptography there. So it can become difficult to use that method if there's a lot of information you want to express, because you need to encode all of that as bits, and then each one of those bits takes up a considerable, I don't know if I want to say considerable, but each one of those has more computational complexity related to it than these other methods. So there's trade-offs either way, and they're both interesting technologies, and there's more work to be done to figure out which way should be gone to actually accomplish the goal. But Christopher summed up the goal well, which is you want to be able to say that there's a signature of everything, and you can present, selectively disclose little pieces of information about what is signed to the person that you want to disclose it to, without revealing the rest of your information and without making it so that that person can find out in some other way the rest of the information or other information about you. So it's a tricky problem to solve. There's a number of different ways of doing it, and it's an open work item for this community.
Excellent. Thank you, Dave. And we're at time. Fortunately, we don't have a lot to review in terms of action items and suggestions. We're sort of... Go ahead.
I did want to just simply say, to close this one out, that, you know, we have a poll. At this point, the work on these different signature suites, in particular the redaction and the CL signatures one, did not get, I think they got one vote. On the other hand, the requirements for data minimization and selective disclosure were very high, among the highest of the polls. So, this is an opportunity for people to kind of reconsider their votes and their interest in all of these, including Chainpoint and all of these before we kind of close out our polling. So do think about that when, that these are important, sub pieces. That was closing thing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so action item, vote if you haven't, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week where we talk a lot more about selective disclosure. Thanks, everyone. Oh, I see. Ryan, someone asked how should we get in contact. Is this for the BTCR?
That's Federico. That's Federico.
Oh, I see.
Quartini. Yeah. Great.
Got it.
Yeah, we'll contact you about the second week of July virtual hackathon on BTCR.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, thank you.